My name is Steph Roller. I'm on the teaching team at Orchard Hill Church, and I am also an eye doctor in Grundy Center. I have been for about 30 years. I had a private practice, and then I sold my practice about a year or so ago to Wolf Eye Clinic, and now I just see patients for them part-time. I spent half my life as a scientific atheist, and the second half of my life as a scientific Christian. So I am super passionate about this topic. And to start us off, I want to introduce you to my super nerdy family. So in my family, we have 2 biology degrees, 2 chemistry degrees, an exercise science degrees, 2 masters, a doctorate, another doctorate, and 2 more PhDs on the way. In our house, science is awesome. And we are nerds. But also, we have multiple All-State athletes, 4 college athletes, 1 NFL tryout, 3 disc golfers, 1 who's a pro, a cross-country CrossFit. Do you guys know what that is? The lifting thing. CrossFit fanatic and competitor, and 1 who teaches cycling and rec class, and 6 people of faith. So how can that be? Because nerds aren't athletes. And true scientists, we don't believe in God, right? So how can I have a house full of nerdy, athletic Christians? It's because people can have many dimensions, and they can be compatible. They're different dimensions. Science and sports can be compatible. I can't tell you how many discussions I've listened to at my kitchen table about how the rim weight on a disc matters to disc golf, or how the rotation affects the flight of a football. Science and sports can go together. And if we can open our eyes to see people in different ways, next slide, can we also open our eyes to see the world around us, both through the lens of science and through the lens of faith? Must we choose between science and faith as if they're mutually exclusive, or can we choose both science and faith? So next slide. If you came tonight and you thought that you were going to hear a presentation on apologetics, which I know Bradley's super glad I'm not doing that because he hates that, this is not the talk for you. I am not going to stand up here tonight and take 30 years of my thinking about this down to 20 minutes and convince you that there's evidence for God. But if that is your jam, then you should look at this website. So it's called 6 Days, and you can find it at 6dayscience.com. It's run by Sarah Salviander, who's an astrophysicist at UT Austin. She is also an atheist turned Christian. If this is your jam and you think this is what you want to do, just take a picture of it and then make sure you play this presentation, because you will get this cool slideshow that uses Einstein's theory of relativity and the concept that time passes at different speeds based on your relative perspective. That's a true theory, by the way, that time is not consistent. And it leads you through the math to show that the 14 billion year old Earth of science and the 60-day-old Earth of the creation story are mathematically equivalent. The link at the bottom, it correlates the 26 testable Genesis creation statements with the findings of modern science. So here's what Genesis says, here's what science says. I actually had the privilege of baptizing a young man who struggled to put his science and faith together, and who accidentally heard me talk about this, took this handout, and was able to resolve his faith in his science dilemma. He actually is on staff here at Orchard now. So, how did my journey start? My journey started at your age. I apologize, I had COVID, and I just can't get over the coughing part. My journey started at your age when I went to attend a lecture in undergraduate school by Marilyn Vos Savant. Marilyn Vos Savant is the person with the highest IQ ever recorded. She simply got a perfect score on the Stanford-Binet test when she was 10 years old, and she's in the Guinness Book of World Records. So she came to our campus, And she was speaking. I'm thinking, I should go listen to the smartest person who's ever lived. Maybe I can learn something. Here's what she taught us. She said, you should avoid having opinions. Now, doesn't that seem stupid for a person who's the smartest person ever? Like, don't have an opinion about anything. But what she meant by that was, keep your mind open because you can keep learning if you don't form such strong opinions so early. Guess what happened? The young Republicans and the future Democrats in the room, because it was an election year, got in a great big fight with her, both sides. The whole thing was in an uproar, and what I learned was I should be an independent the rest of my life. And that way, I don't have to get sucked into either side, and I can be open. But I didn't do a very good job of not holding a strong opinion about science. So early in my life of science, I knew what I thought. And what I had was something that another atheist-turned-Christian C.S. Lewis called willful blindness. Once I formed an opinion, I was willfully blind to anything else. I closed myself off to even considering another viewpoint. And I can remember scoffing at the idiocy of faithful people. They were so far beneath me. Ignorant, uneducated, believing in myths and stories. And I can remember a particular time I was in Chicago at one of the museums, and there was a display of skeletons in a row by evolutionary order. And I thought to myself, this is so obvious. Evolution by chance, no God necessary. I even said to my friend who was with me, I just don't understand how people can be so stupid as to believe in God. But then, as I was studying my specialty, I began to get deeper and deeper into science. Sometimes you can know just enough science to do a little damage for yourself. But I started to learn more, and I began to get really uncomfortable with the math. And I have to be careful here, I'll spend an awful lot of time here, and Andrea only gave me 20 minutes. So, here's the short of it. Cell phones, right? Cell phones have evolved over time, haven't they? They're very similar, but they have small changes. Every time iPhone comes out, something's different. I'm still missing my home button. But it's not because they evolved by chance, is it? It's because their creators made those changes, keeping the things that they wanted and changing or discarding the things that they didn't. And I started to think about my specialty, eyes, how complex that is, how other systems are complex and have to work along with it. It's not even an independent organ. And how could that happen by random chance? So let me try to just take a second with this. You have your eyeball, right? It's a big sphere. Inside there is a lens. That lens does some focusing for you. You guys aren't thinking about it right now. Everywhere you look, your lens is focusing because it has its own set of pulleys and muscles that make it work. Excuse me. The lens isn't even the biggest refracting part of the eye. It's the cornea, the surface of your eye that bends most of the light. That cornea is the most unique tissue in your whole body. You know why? It doesn't have blood vessels. What would happen if your cornea had blood vessels? You cannot see through blood vessels. Yet, that tissue still needs oxygen. And so, your eye had to develop a tear system so that oxygen could get to it. And that system involves all kinds of glands, including glands in the base of your lids, so that every time you blink, it squeezes the tears out to keep your cornea from drying out. If your cornea dries out, it's opaque and you can't see. Your eyelids protect you. They keep you from having something get in your eye. They keep your eye from drying out at night. It's an amazing, amazing system. And then all of that image that comes through and gets focused has to go into your retina, and then what good is your eyeball if it doesn't connect to something to interpret it? So it has to connect to your brain, right? And what good is that if you don't react to what you see? So then your brain has to send signals to your muscular system so that you can move out of the way of whatever's coming at you. Or you can move towards it if it's something you like. So all of this has to happen, not just the system in the eye, but everything else. Your eye also needs oxygen from your lungs, the back parts do. It needs nutrients, and that means it doesn't work unless it's connected to a body with a digestive system and a respiratory system, and those things don't work unless you have a vascular system to get all that stuff there. Do you see where I'm going with this? There is just no way in my mind that all of this could happen at the same time, because no part of your eye works unless every part works. So there I was, stuck with math and probability and statistics that didn't work. What should I do? But still, I thought science was true. The pursuit and application of knowledge and the understanding of the natural world that followed some systematic methodology based on evidence. What was next? Well, here's what I did. I took a look at one of the greatest scientists of all time, listed along with Miss Marilyn Vos Savant as one of the top 20 smartest people in history, Sir Isaac Newton. And you know what I found out? That he studied physics and anatomy and mathematics in order to understand how God worked. What if science wasn't opposed to God? What if science was a way to see God? And wow, my vision of the world exploded. I saw everything differently. It was like that scene in Wizard of Oz where everything goes from black and white to color. It was fantastic. So Jesus turned water into wine. And he did it in front of a whole lot of witnesses. If you guys are interested in that story, I'm actually teaching it here in 2 weeks on the 15th on Sunday. But anyway, Jesus turns water into wine. And wouldn't it be cool to know how he did that? Well, what do we call the study of how chemistry works? We call it how atoms and molecules work together. What do we call that? Chemistry. What do we call the study of the heavens? Astronomy. What do we call the study of gravity and thermodynamics and optics? The worst science, isn't it? Physics. What about the study of life, including the study of DNA, which I believe is the language with which God wrote you? What do we call that study? Biology or biochemistry. So that leads me to this guy, Francis Collins. Does anyone know who this is? Because it says, right? Francis Collins is another atheist turned Christian. Do you guys sense a theme here? Sarah Salviander, C.S. Lewis, me, Francis Collins, we're all atheists, scientists turned Christians. This is the lead scientist of the Human Genome Project. He was in charge of decoding the entire DNA sequence for human beings. And he's an absolute hero of science who became convinced that God existed while he was in medical school. The very person who unlocked the secret of the human genome is in fact a Christ follower. And here's what he had to say about this discovery. He said, "It was both a stunning scientific achievement and an act of worship." He authored a great book, if you're interested in this, called The Language of God. And he also runs a group called BioLogos that seeks to reconcile science and faith. So what about faith? What is it? What is faith? Okay, here's a picture of some of our best friends. So these are my friends, Nate and Michelle Stahl, and we have been friends for a really long time. Now, how much faith do I have that Michelle and Nate will show up in time to go to dinner and a show at the Gallagher. How much faith do you have? You have none because you don't know them at all. I have total faith because Nate is the kind of person who shows up half early, hour early for everything, and you're going to be the first person at whatever event you go to, right? Faith is based on experience. Faith is not belief without evidence. Faith is founded in some evidence, enough to get yourself open to letting God in. And science versus faith, it's not an evidence problem. It's actually a problem of different philosophies. Next slide. So a scientific atheist believes that we are nothing more than matter. That you guys out here are just made up of chemicals and atoms, all arranged in a certain way, and you're really no different than the chair you're sitting in, or the tree outside, or a rock in the parking lot. Is that what you think? But a scientific Christian believes that we are matter plus something more, something transcendent, something of God. Something we can't explain by science. So that's a take-home question I have for you guys to think about. Do you think you're just matter? Just a collection of carbon and oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, just arranged differently than the chair you're sitting in? Or do you think that we have something else? There's a difference, too, in the perception of what God means. So atheists think that Christians believe that our God is just a God of the gaps. Like if science can't explain it, if we don't know what happened, then God's just a convenient crutch. We just use him to fill in whatever we don't understand. But that's not what Christians believe. We believe God is a God of the entire show. God is in the everyday. God is in the science. God is in the miracles. It is all his. And Christian scientists are in awe of what God has done and created through the language of math and chemistry, physics, anatomy, and more. Every discovery reveals more questions, more complexity, more awe, until the probability of random chance is so far-fetched. Only willful blindness can keep you from seeing God through every lens, whether that lens is a telescope or a microscope or the lens of your eye. So what about this guy? What did he think? Well, Albert Einstein, his writings suggest that he could never come to terms with being a scientist and a man of faith. He really struggled, and for some reason, it seems to me that it never occurred to him to hold both things. And here's one of his dilemmas about science, and this is why he never ruled out God. He said, "You can speak about the ethical foundations of science, but you cannot speak of the scientific foundation of ethics." In other words, science cannot explain why we have morality or why we have ethics. Why do I care about you guys sitting here? You're not helping my DNA exist. You aren't my offspring. Why should I care? If all we are is matter, if all we are is a way for our DNA to reproduce itself and continue on, then why do I care? Why do I care about kids in Haiti? Like Carter talked about. Why does the whole world have sort of a similar morality, no matter the culture? Why do we have love, especially agape love? Why do we do things for other people when we don't expect anything in return? Why do we have laughter or sorrow? Science cannot explain that. And so, Albert Einstein could never come to grips and never say there wasn't a God, because he couldn't answer that question. So if we're just a collection of matter without a transcendent soul, why do those things exist? That's something you can talk about. Okay, I'm gonna add this last note because I just felt like I had to. Corruption. I'm gonna talk about corruption. Corruption can make you disgusted with either science or faith. And I don't want it to keep you from these two very pure and excellent ideals, okay? So just last week, Wall Street Journal, I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and here's an article that in 2022, 5,500 scientific papers were retracted. Why were they retracted? Because they were crap science. How does that happen? How come we only had 119 rescinded in 2002? It's because of corruption. So I can remember far enough back when science was so pure that no respectable scientist would ever, ever go to work for a private corporation or big pharma or the ag industry. Every respectable scientist worked at a university, and they didn't care about money. If you wanted to be a well-known, respected scientist, you worked in a university setting where your stuff was strictly peer-reviewed before it was published, and you shared it for the good of the world. That's not what's happening now. It's become corrupted. Not all of it, but some. And so if you work for a private entity, you get money and funding based on publishing. If you don't publish, you're not funded. And that's how we get so much bad science. What about faith? Can faith be corrupted? Church sure can be. I see a lot of you nodding, right? We don't have to talk about that for very long. We've all seen televangelists or people who promote prosperity gospel, and they sure do get rich selling their books, right? We don't believe that here. But it's not science or faith really that's corrupted. It's people who do those things. So please don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Please understand that science is of God and faith is of God. And those things aren't corruptible. It's just the people doing them. I don't want you to become disgusted with either one and turn away. The church might hurt you someday. That's not God. That's me. That's us, okay? So, true science, it doesn't compete with God. We are uncovering, thinking God's thoughts after him, learning his language. So this is more than 30 years of me going through all the evidence, thinking about everything, pondering the math condensed into 20 minutes. I love to talk about this. It is a passion of mine. I love to talk about specifics of it too, so if you have specific questions. And if you actually want a hard copy of that paper that compares Genesis to what we know in science, Andrea or Kristen have some copies for you. Otherwise, I'm always hanging around Orchard, and you can reach out to me anytime with questions. I remember being your age and going through college classes, and I remember friends or professors, or things that you're doing, trying to convince you that faith is stupid. I was in that boat. I would have been trying to convince you of that. Hang on to your faith. It is good, and it is of God. And science, that's of God too. Okay, hope this gets you thinking a little bit. Will you pray with me? God, you speak in languages that we can barely understand, and we're trying so hard to run after you and just to know how you work. And one of the ways we do that is through science. Thank you for allowing us just a tiny glimpse into all the things you do. But please keep us mindful that it is you and your language. it is not us. And even when we uncover something of you, let us glorify you and recognize who the author and creator of that science was. In Jesus' holy name, amen.